last week, and I don't feel like I was really present this first lecture last week. The first hour, and the second hour, which of course you didn't witness, I came back into my body or something, because then I knew what I was talking about. So if it seemed a little disjointed last week, it was. So I'm just sharing. Are you excited? Great. And Kate, our TA, who's not here today, said, "Are you okay?" It's like, I don't know. I wasn't sure. She said, "It looked like you looked at some of your slides and you were about to say something and you couldn't remember what you were saying." I was like, "Yeah, that's exactly it." I was scrolling through the Rolodex in my mind going, "What did I want to say about that?" But that's not going to happen today. Let's hope not. Okay. So, Greek and Unani medicine. So, last week, Egyptian medicine. Then we got to Babylonia. Today, we're going to talk about Greek and Unani. How many people have heard of Unani medicine? Okay. Are you in fundamentals of TCM yet?
No.
Next quarter. Okay, so we're going to talk about Ayurveda and TCM next week. But today, we're going to talk about Greek, Roman, a little bit, and Unani medicine. So, let's start with a few quotes before we get to our clinical pearl. You might have heard of this guy, Hippocrates. "The gods do not send down disease upon men, but men bring disease upon themselves. Each disease has a natural cause. Nature never needs instruction. Don't do too much." So already, this is in contrast to Egyptian medicine. The gods do not send disease down upon men. So he's already saying,
what do they know?
So this is from Unani medicine. Human Sinai. "Medicine is a science from which one learns the states of the human body with respect to what is healthy and what is not, in order to preserve good health when it exists and restore it when it is lacking." I love this one. "The physician, even though he has his doubts, must always make the patient believe that he will recover, for the state of the body is linked to the state of the mind."
I like that one.
Yeah, you're going to get better. I don't think that's what you're saying, but... Clinical pearl.
Three.
Turmeric.
Woohoo!
Yeah, tell us about turmeric.
Anti-inflammatory.
Anti-inflammatory. That's one of the things it's known for. What else?
Bright yellow.
It's delicious. It's danger close yellow. Yes. Turmeric. It's a... What is that?
Root.
We don't really call it a root.
Rhizome.
It's a rhizome, just like ginger. It's in the ginger family. So it's a rhizome underground. It used to grow and it shoots up. So we want to talk about cooking today. So turmeric is an herb. Its main use, many people think of it, is in. Is that all turmeric?
The cap wasn't on, and so a lot fell into the beans today. So it has a lot of turmeric.
That's a lot of turmeric.
Yeah.
It's known for its anti-inflammatory property. Because it's an anti-inflammatory, it's been known to help certain conditions. But remember, we're naturopaths. We don't necessarily treat conditions. We don't say, "Oh, you have irritable bowel syndrome, take turmeric." That's treating disease. We don't treat the disease. We treat the cause. We'll get to that next quarter when we talk about the principles of naturopathic medicine. So turmeric is an anti-inflammatory. It's also considered an anti-carcinogenic. It helps with the liver in phase 1 and phase 2 detoxification. We haven't gotten to that physiology in only week 4. So it helps with the liver detoxification system. All around, it's a great herb. It doesn't denature when you cook it, unlike some things like garlic. When you cook garlic, the heat destroys the allicin content, which is known to be antibacterial. It's also antibacterial and antiparasitic. It's used in so many formulas, especially in Ayurvedic medicine when we get to that. But it's also great because you can just cook with turmeric. So just things to think about cooking with your... How is food when we really talk about Hippocrates? And what are you doing that's bringing illness to yourself? What about the food you're eating? And how can you cook with food? So turmeric... anti-carcinogenic, antibacterial, antiparasitic, antiviral, but mostly anti-inflammatory. That's all. It's a simple little thing. Um, So, at the end of the Babylonian period, we had the Minoan period in between. Just around this time, this is an intermediate period when the Minoan civilization spread from Egypt to Europe to Asia, so it was more and more inclusive. Just want to get to Greek thought. I just want to go to Greek. There's a lot of things to talk about. So we begin to see the Greek philosophers. What's really interesting is we had in Egyptian medicine, we had the physicians who dealt with trauma, and we also had the magicians. And we're going to see the beginning of Greek thought, which started to say, how do we put disease in context? We don't understand what this disease is. It's not just can't all be because of the gods. So we have a number of philosophers who were originally schooled in Egypt and began to say, all I'm putting up these slides is, because it talks about the principles and where the idea of healing came from. Thales, who was schooled in Egypt, said that the source of all things was water. So this is the first time when we start to say, oh, the source of all things. Now, we talked about spirit last week. We talked about Egyptian idea of soul. There were five different components. Thales also said that the spirit, he began to say that there's a spirit. It's this life force. Didn't really articulate it more than that. But this life force is immortal. So after you die, this life force remains. It was the first Greek rationalist theory. Then, only 30 years later, the next philosopher was starting to say, you know what, I don't think water's the source, there's air. So they started to talk about these different substances. Air is the source of everything. Then we say that there's this invisible matter, and fire is the source. So now we have water, now we have air, now we have fire. But then finally someone says, you know what, I think there's four parts. And this is going to be the basis for the rest of medical philosophy for a long period of time. So this is an interesting thing. There's four elements. One of the first Greek philosopher physicians said that there were four elements, but also said the principle, kind of sounds like modern physics, nothing can be created or destroyed, only transformed. So this also led him to believe that the soul is immortal. There is a soul. There must be a soul, because one minute you're living, one minute you're dead. So the conclusion was, there's this life force, there's this soul. It can't be created and it can't be destroyed, which means it must exist after your death. That was the conclusion. We're just talking about the thought. And health and disease are a result of the balance of these four elements. So this is the first time we start to say, God, it's not the gods and goddesses that cause disease. It's not the spirits. It must be these four elements. So it's the very first time we're starting to see this. Now we're going to get to TCM and Ayurveda, so it's a different system of medicine. So Pythagoras, you've all heard of Pythagoras? Some people think that Pythagoras actually was the person who wrote the Hippocratic Oath. When we get to the Hippocratic Corpus, his body of work, it's not really written by Hippocrates. Well, it's written by Hippocrates and like 17 other people. But Pythagoras, 580 to 489 BCE, was one of the first physicians that started to talk about the profession of being a doctor. He founded a society of health and learning. He was a vegan, not even having beans. So that didn't purify, that created some disturbance in digestion. Some of you might know that. And he said that the study of science is a rational thought. He's the one who said that Earth is round. And he did believe that there's reincarnation, again, because nothing could be created, nothing could be destroyed. There is this soul. Talk about the four elements. Let's talk about the four elements. The four elements are earth, fire, air, and water. Now we get to TCM, we're going to see five. When we get to Ayurveda, we're going to talk about the doshas. We're going to talk about the elements as well. Earth is cold, fire is hot, obviously air is dry, water is moist. And in physiology, he came up with these terms. Have you seen these before? Blood, phlegm, yellow bile, black bile. We're talking about 580. This will be the predominant thought. This happens in the Unani medicine. This will be the predominant thought until the 1500s. So, blood. So we started talking about physiology. So up until then, in Egyptian and Babylonian medicine, there's no physiology. They weren't talking about physiology. They talked about anatomy and these diseases. So blood is hot and moist. phlegm is cold and moist. Yellow bile is hot and dry. Black bile is cold and dry. He said the proportion of your humors is what causes ill health. When the humors are out of balance, you become sick. Now, when we get to Ayurveda, science of life, balance of life, everything's about balance. Different system in India. Proportion of humors determines your constitution, your temperament, the hot body, your mental qualities, your state of health. Direct treatment. So therefore, if you're ill, the treatment must be, how do we rebalance those four humors? The humoral theory dominated the Western medicine until 1858, actually. So an example would be, if you get pneumonia, there's an abnormal accumulation of this cold and damp in your chest. Abnormal accumulation of phlegm arising in the head mixes with the blood, because blood is hot and will travel all over the body. So this cold damp mixes with the blood and travels down to your chest. You get fevers, chills, and accumulation of fluid and cough up. Nobody came up with these things yet. I mean, there were a few people starting to talk about this, so this is why this is important. So, think about this. You're sick, you have pneumonia, what's the treatment? Balancing the humors. What do we think of the treatment is now? Get rid of the virus, get rid of the bacteria. Is that what we think? Does that work? We'll talk about this because we're going to get to Hippocrates. The Pythagorean theory, he talked about these crisis days. He had all, you know what Pythagoras did with numbers and geometry. But he also, and Hippocrates agreed that there were critical days, number 3, 4, 7, 11, 12, and 14. And these were days that certain diseases would happen. They would see periodicity with certain diseases. It was also time of month. So, interestingly, we talk about becoming rational and getting rid of magic in medicine, but he still had these ideas that there were these critical numerical days that you should not do things on because you might get sick. Each disease had a different expected or fixed days of crisis and resolution. So if you had pneumonia, a certain kind of pneumonia, it might be resolving in 14 days. If you have a cold or a flu, it will resolve in 7 days. He created that idea. Now, interesting thing, the other thing about Pythagoras is it was the first sect of medicine. It was the first group of physicians. And he created, now Hammurabi, remember Hammurabi? And I said the Code of Hammurabi in Babylonian times. Pythagoras created an ethics or code, and this is why some people think that he wrote the Hippocratic Oath. Physicians must not aid in suicide. Physicians must not aid in abortion. Physicians must not let blood, no surgery. So bloodletting was still there, you know, because if you were hot, excess heat, you must let out the blood. It was a common practice. We'll talk about that up until the 1900s, bloodletting and leeches. I already said that. So that was just part of his code of ethics. Alcmaeon, a student of Pythagoras, said balance of the opposing force generates heat, health. So in Pythagorean theory, you have this pneumonia. You have excess mucus. You have excess phlegm. You have to get that in balance. But what was said here is you have to do the opposite. This is important because we're going to start talking about the law of similars and the law of contraries. And this is the basis of homeopathy. This is the basis of allopathic medicine. So if you had a wet, dry condition, you'd want to do something that was if you had a wet, cold condition, you would want to do a treatment that was dry and hot. So if you have fever, you'd want to give cold. This was the idea here about doing the opposite. What do we do when we try to balance disease? Do we do opposite or we do like? Principle. So Asclepius. There's a picture. Oh, nice picture. So you know this. You've seen this. It's part of the caduceus. So the Greeks believed, so again, we wanted to get into rational thought, but the Greeks believed that you can trace medicine back to the god Asclepius. It's even mentioned in Homer. And Some people say that Asclepius is really Imhotep from the Egyptian tradition that I talked about last week. So there were temples to Asclepius. And so this is the thing. We begin to see this idea, just like we had in Egypt, where we had those healing centers. We have temples of Asclepius where were huge healing centers. And so it just added to the Egyptian notion of what they would do. They had prayers were left by cured patients. So a patient was cured at a temple of Asclepius, they would write the prayers down, and they would put it in certain parts of the wall. Religious ceremonies and sacrifices were there. There was the Abaton, the sleep center. So we had those places in Egypt where people would sleep. And I said last week, wouldn't you feel better if you just slept? But in the Abaton, the priest would then interpret your dreams. So this is what your dream meant. So even though the physicians were trying to get away from idea of the gods and goddesses, it was still happening. The bathhouses were situated by springs, so they did hydrotherapy, hot and cold, hot water or lying in the hot water. There was a stadium or theater, because that's also where poetry and art was performed for the people who were going. So you have this whole experience. There were things about catharsis, emesis, helping people vomit, bloodlet, giving them drugs so that they could get rid and purge. The main thing in medicine at that time was purging. So if you have some kind of infection, get rid of it, purge it, get it out. And all of this happened at the temples of Asclepius. So Pythagoras' group began to be formed into a guild called the Asclepiads. And there were famous temples all around the Greek Empire, Kos and Synodos, which we're going to get to in a moment. This is where the idea of a spa is, a sanatorium. Spas were there. So you could sleep, you could have water therapy, you could rest. This is the idea of the spas. So the important thing about this time is the apprenticeship model. This is the thing that happened in medicine. So you would follow, in order to be in these guilds, you would follow a physician and watch them with their patients. That was the beginning, because there weren't really that many books at the time, so you would follow by apprenticeship. You would join one of these groups, people would study together, and then there were the oath. There was an oath that people started to take to the Pythagoras code. So Pythagoras, then you have these two schools. Actually, the Sabinian school started first. It was the oldest one. And this school of thought said, even though they were still balancing the humors and talking about the humors, they said that diagnosis is based on symptomology. What were the symptoms you had? In this school, they would write down every symptom. You would write down every symptom and you would number it. How many symptoms do you have? That was the determinant of the disease. So, for instance, if you had diarrhea, that was the number one symptom. The diagnosis was diarrhea. What's the problem with that? What's the cause? It's the symptom. Modern medicine still does that sometimes. So it's interesting, and you look at your ICD-9 code when you go to the doctor or you get to your clinic and you start circling those codes. Diarrhea. Well, what's the cause? Fatigue. What's the cause? Chronic fatigue. What's the cause? Strep throat. What's the cause? Beta hemolytic strep. Okay. That's a different thing. But up until this point, you get a diagnosis of bursitis. Does anyone tell you? What do you do for bursitis?
Take turmeric.
Turmeric! Actually, it's a great treatment for your bursitis. Inflammation. But think about this. I had a patient who came to see me, mostly for counseling, but he came to see me in my office, and he said, my throat's hurting. I looked at his throat, and was like, oh, you got a sore throat. He's like, oh, yeah, well, I have a general checkup for insurance later today. I was like, yeah, general checkup. And we said, what would you do? Oh, yeah, he did the garlic and some gargle and some other things and take his echinacea. And he was like, fine with that. He calls me up in a panic, 5 p.m. He's like, my doctor said I have pharyngitis. Oh, my God, I have pharyngitis. Pharyngitis? Pharynx? Inflammation of the throat. Sore throat. He was like, I have pharyngitis. Oh, my God. He was stressed out. He's like, what do I do here? He's like, pharyngitis is a sore throat. Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. He kept calling me. He kept saying, I have pharyngitis. What does that do to a patient? And what do we do? It's based on this school. It's based on this school of thought. And what do we do when we pronounce, oh, you have pharyngitis. Don't worry about it. Now I sound like a... But, you know, you have a sore throat. We could call it pharyngitis. What happens when we give names to patients with diseases that are really just symptoms? So, the old school, this is before Hippocrates, the old school said, you have symptoms, list the symptoms, what they are, that's your disease, that's your diagnosis. It's still part of medicine practice today. And I should also say that they had two other parts, that the body symptoms and parts were separate. You have pharyngitis and you have diarrhea. They're not related. Well, it sounds like modern medicine, isn't it? You know, you go see your surgeon for something. He's like, but I have a headache. Oh, can't work on that. My mom was in the hospital for back surgery. She got a migraine. Oh, well, I don't do anything with that. Let's get the neurologist in here. The neurologist said, well, it's this kind of headache, so we can't do that, so let's get this other person in here. Body parts are separate. That is not part of our system of medicine. And the doctrine of contraries. The doctrine of contraries still goes back over here when we're talking about the opposite. Balance the opposite, the opposing force. Then we have the Coase School. So a bunch of physicians from the Cincinnatian School decided to separate, to break off. So this doesn't make sense. Yes. Okay.
Earlier it said they got some cough disease with you, and now with this type of prescription, did they identify the disease with the person at all, or just, you know, people generally identify, this disease is got from the
good question. It is still a little bit vague at this point. Pythagoras said the humors cause your constitution. So your constitution are how you move in the world. Your temperament. Your temperament is your disposition. It didn't really say how you're interacting with the environment. Balance. So they would do these things to balance the humors. Grow up if you're nauseous, and then that would balance the humors. It didn't really say about your relationship with the world yet. Is that what you're kind of asking?
Yeah.
Okay. No. The disease is part of the balanced genius. And then came Hippocrates. So that was a good question. The Coase School still said, yes, there's humors, but the body is all together. And Hippocrates is the main person from the Coase School. There's Hippocrates. Don't you remember? That's exactly what he looked like. Well, that was when he was 35. I try to give you something pretty to look at. I was going to take us all to Greece, but somebody said they really wanted to stay for anatomy. He was born in Coase. He was a contemporary of Socrates. We're not going to get into this, but Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, they had all different ideas of what the soul was. That's another class. What was really interesting is he was one of the first physicians, because Pythagoras did not believe in in these guilds of physicians. He said, yeah, I'm going to teach medicine for a fee. People would do medicine for a fee, but they weren't teaching medicine for a fee. He said, yeah, I'm going to make a fee for teaching. He got paid, probably as much as I did. He had such a disdain for theory, philosophy. He didn't want to talk about theory and philosophy. He wanted to separate the idea of philosophy from medicine. And he said that you can explain everything through observation and natural explanation. He was the first person who really started to write down case histories. What they would write down before was, okay, headache, diarrhea, parasite, and broken bone. They would just write the thing. He wrote detailed case histories, which is great because there are records of these. Detailed case histories because he said, how would the physician know what they're doing or what happened? So he was one of the first persons to talk about a clear record. And he said, this goes back to your question in a way. He said that the purpose of the physician is to assist nature's recuperative powers to throw off disease. So remember our naturopathic principles, vis medicatrix naturae, the healing power of nature, which I'll get to in a second. Let me just talk about what he wrote. There's 60 treatises written between 430 and 330. That's 100 years. There's several authors. They're all attributed to Hippocrates. four groups of writing on ancient medicine, air, water, and places, sacred places to go to heal, sacred diseases, book of prognostics. He wrote books on pathology, of particular conditions, everything. But this, one of his most famous books on the nature of man was really written by his son-in-law. So there's tons of books written by Hippocrates, which is a big thing. He said the imbalance in the elements disturbs the organism. So what Hippocrates is saying is, you get sick, the humors are out of balance. What makes the humors out of balance? Man. Man is the cause of the humors being out of balance. There's change of seasons, and that can impact my humors, but it's because of who I am. How do I respond to this? Do I eat the same diet all the time? Is it appropriate to eat it all the time? According to Hippocrates, no, because there's different seasons, there's different times of year, there's different times of day, there's different work. Depending on what you do and I do, we should have different constitutions, and not just that we have different constitutions, but because of your work and my work, there's different needs. So you cannot give one-size-fits-all treatment for a disease. That's part of the thing that he's saying. The imbalance in the elements disturbs the organism, and health exists when the humors are well mixed and balanced. That's called eucrasia. We still use that term, but not the same way. Disease results from improper mixture of these elements based on how we're living. He said there's three stages of healing or disease. Disturbance, concoction, that's where we get cooked. So there's a disturbance that happens. I'm out of balance. It's cold and damp outside, and I eat cold and damp foods, and then I get cold and damp. From Ayurveda and TCM, we can explain that. Well, in Hippocrates, he would say the same thing. I'm disturbing the balance because I'm going to get cold and damp. My digestion is going to be sluggish now. He said the same thing. And that's good. It's going to cook bad, and then there's going to be discharge. And hopefully, discharge. So he's one of the first people, like we'll see in some naturopathic theory. You have a fever, you get nauseous, you have diarrhea, any of these things to expel, it's the body's way of trying to discharge the illness. One of the things we talk about with natural medicine, you eat something, or you take an herb that's toxic for you, what's the first thing that usually happens? Nausea and vomiting. You take an overdose of certain drugs. That's not usually the first thing that happens. So he says there's these stages. You get disturbed, and when we get next quarter to naturopathic clinical theory and what's the naturopathic principles, we talk about these. We have little different stages, but there's a disturbance, it cooks inside you, and you want to throw it off. If you don't throw it off, it leads down the path of further illness. So when you have a cold, you have a cough, do you want to suppress the cough? He's talking about suppression. He doesn't say it, though, that way. So it's with Hippocrates in Europe, which we see the first concept of vital force, force vitale, vis medicatrix naturae, if you will. It is the nature in the organism, but it's not in Greek. It is the nature in the organism, or the organism in the unity with nature. That's the term physis. Organism in its unity with nature. That's what physis is. The word physis, which heals. Doctors are physicians. So it makes you think, are you really a naturopathic physician? Are allopathic physicians physicians? Because the goal of a physician is to work in concert with nature. Your individual nature, how you are, understanding your balance, and helping align you so that you're working with nature in general. So it's a reciprocal relationship between the organism and the environment. The organism grows at the expense of the environment. Diseases occur in some severe difficulty in this digestion. He said it was in this digestion of our relationship, and he called that pepsis. And the term dyspepsia is still around for heartburn. When we don't interact with our environment well, we get dyspepsia. He said it all those years ago. So you eat something, and you get dyspepsia, you take an antacid. According to Hippocrates, it's like, no, you're not living in concert with the environment. Your mind is saying, well, I should be able to eat anything I want. And your body's saying, no, that's not good for me. It's really like the first naturopath. He talked about the law of similars, using nature of the medicine is analogous to the symptoms of the disease. This is homeopathy, which we're going to get to in a few weeks. Homeopathy is like cures like. I give you bee venom. Potentized bee venom.
We'll get to that.
But potentized bee venom, that if you were healthy, would give you the same symptoms as somebody who's stung by a bee. You're stung by a bee, I give you potentized bee venom. Symptoms go away. That's the law of similars. We talk about the law of similars and the law of contraries. If you have a high fever, bless you. Going back to the gods. Asclepius, bless you.
Sunny nose.
Or anybody. Contrary is the use of opposites. So, I'm stung by a bee, I give Benadryl. Major anti-inflammatory. Naturopathic medicine, let's be clear about this. Naturopathic medicine is not in opposition to allopathic medicine. Allopathic medicine, the only thing you can distinguish from allopathic medicine is homeopathic medicine. Like cure like, using, I have a headache, I take aspirin. I take Willowboy. It doesn't matter. It is anti-inflammatory. It's the law of opposites. That's allopathic medicine. Homeopathic medicine is giving something that would give the same symptoms. So let's not confuse us by saying, oh, we're allopaths and we're naturopaths. We're conventional doctors. We're naturopaths. Where are we on this? So he said about the law of similars, disease is born of like things, and by like things they are healed. He was the first homeopath. Now, when we get to Hahnemann, Hahnemann claims not to have stolen his ideas from anybody else. Hahnemann read Hippocrates, Galen, there's records of him reading. Galen, Hippocrates, Avicenna, Inunani, Paracelsus, he read them all. There are diseases to be treated by similars, others better treated by contraries. Everything is dependent on the nature of the disease, so you can't just have one rule of thumb. You have to look at the person, time of year, time of day, everything. The majority of diseases may be cured by the same things that cause them. He said that in Sacred Disease. So why I'm saying this to you is when we talk about homeopathy, this was already present in an idea way back with Hippocrates. Well, you know, this is like condensing world history very quickly. So the Greeks, they had a great run of things. You know, they did a good job, you know, a lot of philosophy. The Romans hated them. The Romans came, they invaded, they took care of everything, they got rid of everything. They said medicine is a lowly occupation. The Romans still believed that the gods cured things. So for a while during the Roman Empire, which I'm not going to talk about at all, they went back to believe in gods, tried to destroy a lot of Greek thought. So for about 600 years, that happened. And then 600 years later, Galen was born. So we talk about Hippocrates a lot. He may be the father of modern medicine. It could have been Pythagoras, actually. Galen is really, I would say, more of the father of modern medicine. Galen read every book by Hippocrates. So we're talking about now we're 129 modern century. Born in Asia Minor, modern Turkey, during the Roman Empire, sent to Alexandria. I should say this. Where did I put it? Alexandria. The city of Alexandria was this, created in 332 BC. At the time that Alexandria was created, Athens was there was a school in Athens. Huge library, huge museum, and during the rise of Christianity, they closed the academy in Athens, and so all these philosophers and physicians moved to Alexandria because it threatened the church. And so they said, all Greek rational thought, of course it threatened the church. Threatened the church because we're going to say there's no such thing as spirit, there's no such thing as God. And so they just said, no. So it threatened them, so they closed the church in Athens and everybody went to Alexandria. Alexandria for years had academies, so academies of medicine, academies of art, philosophy, science, there were tons of museums, medical schools. The library at Alexandria burned down several times, they kept rebuilding it. There was a medical school and the curriculum was reading all of Hippocrates' books. At the end of its reign, it completely destroyed all of Galen's works. And I'm jumping ahead, so I'm going to back up. I just want to mention Alexandria. So sent to Alexandria for medical education for 9 years of education at the age of 17. He was the predominant medical authority until the 1500s. His anatomy, physiology, more prolific writing than Hippocrates. And he brought the Coase School and the Cincinnatus School together. He brought rivaling thoughts together. He is the first person who said, you know, the best physician is also a philosopher. Because he recognized that you have to understand, philosophically, you have to understand, for what purpose am I doing this? You know, why? What's the reason behind this? What's the rationale? And if you don't have any rationale, that's your philosophy. You can't practice medicine. He said that we need to look at causation and causality. And he believed, he said, that every theoretical concern should be proven by experiment. You have a theory, and you have to prove it. He was a great physiologist. He was an experimenter. He was the first to demonstrate that the brain was the center of the will by cutting pigs' laryngeal nerves and seeing that they couldn't squeal anymore. He was unable to squeal physicians to gladiators. So the pigs weren't allowed to become gladiators. He was a physician. There should be another section that says he was a physician to the gladiators. At 33, he had success in Rome, became the physician to Marcus Aurelius and two succeeding emperors, wrote 125 books. Come on, get busy, guys. On philosophy, mathematics, law, grammar, 125 books on medicine. The Bass Encyclopedia talked about pulses, books on anatomy. So what else did he say? He talked about the four elements. Interesting. Up until then, there were four elements and four qualities, and there were three organs. And Galen, so Hippocrates was saying, you know, there's four organs, the heart, the brain, the liver. And Galen said, there needs to be four. So he said that it was the spleen. He said that food also had characteristics of the humors. So he talked about dietetics. Hippocrates did talk about what you ate, but he didn't put the food in the quality, like turmeric. It's pungent and spicy. In Ayurveda, we'll see that. TCM, we'll see that. Galen started talking about the qualities of food. They have humor. So if we want to balance people, now it's easier. If I know the qualities of the food, the humors of the food, the elements of the food, I can balance the person. Quality. And he also talked about science. He also talked about the quality of the food and plants is based on the soil. He talked about they believed in God. He did believe that God worked through natural law. What do I want to get to because I noticed the time? So, vital force, talking about spirit. He had the concept of a pneuma, spirit. Pneuma was the creative force of being. It animated and stimulated everything. You have the pneuma, it's the life force. All growth and development are based on it. Now, this is kind of stealing from Aristotle. But he had three different types. Vital, spirit, the pneuma, zotikon, that was present in the heart. It came through the breath. So you've heard of this, in spiritus. When we talk about inspiration, breathing in spiritus, breathing in spirit. Ex spiritus is not about dying. It's about breathing out your spirit into the life force. So when we do meditation with breath, which we'll get to, can you breathe in life force? Can you breathe in inspiration? This is what Hippocrates said. Breathe it in, it's seated in the heart, and disperses through the body because the heart's linked to circulation. There's a few other types of pneuma or spirit that I'm not going to get to right now. Talks about the Library of Alexandria. I know I'm going really quickly. The points I'm trying to make you think of is look at the thought of vital force, spirit, law of similars. In Alexandria, this is where you began to see a difference in medicine, a division in medicine between theory and practice. This is why we have this class, theory and practice. The physiology, the etiology, all the things about the... and then the practice, what do we actually do? What are the therapeutics? This is a text from Avicenna. It's a treatise by Galen where they started talking about the divisions of the body and everything started getting separated. There was divisions upon divisions. Decline of Greece, decline of Roman Empire. Yeah, yeah. Unani. I want to get to Unani quickly in the next 5 minutes. And it's not to underscore its importance because Unani medicine really had a huge influence and nobody knows that it's Islamic medicine. When we say it's Islamic medicine, we're not saying that it's based on the Muslim culture. If Islamic, because at this time, there were, you know, it's from the middle of the 7th century to the end of the 15th century, and that's when the Greek empires broke into the Ottoman. See that? But Islamic medicine, the rise of the Arabic culture. The main language was Arabic. The main writing was Arabic. A lot of our treaties by Galen are no longer existing in Greek. What they are existing in is in translations to Arabic. So that's important to note. Interesting thing about Unani. So again, isn't it interesting? We have Egyptian, then Babylonian, it adds things, and then we have Greek medicine, and it adds things, and then we have Roman, and it adds things, and then we go back to Galen, and it adds things, and it keeps getting more and more expansive. So Unani adds a lot. So because the Unani medicine combines practice from all these different areas, it combines the medical practices and the religious practices as well. And so it combines the religious practices of Muslims, Jews, Christians, Zoroastrians, and others, which includes dietary and fasting laws. So some of the dietary and fasting laws that were based on religion wind up becoming part of medical practices. Climates, because we're still talking about humors, you know, different climates are going to affect people differently. So there's different choices. Economics and commerce and travel, all of these things add to the philosophy of Unani medicine. It's based on the work of Hippocrates and Galen, four elements. So we thought Galen. So this is interesting. In modern medicine, we don't talk about Avincia, who I can't pronounce his real name. In the West, he's known. Prince of the Physicians, studied medicine at age of 13, practiced medicine at age of 16. Father died at 21, so he traveled around the world writing and wrote the Canon of Medicine, the Book of Healing, the most extensive encyclopedia, the Book of Healing, on medicine to date. Scientist, researcher, developed the first filtration and distillation process. He was one of the first people to start talking about essential oils, the distillation of essential oils from herbs. The first one was rose oil. Memorized the Quran at the age of 10. He began the idea of hospitals. So we have, up until then, the spas. He started talking about hospitals. And what hospitals were different wards where people could go for different illnesses. He also started talking about herbal medicine as part of the hospital. And we're going to get to monastic medicine in the 1500s, where the monks started creating herb gardens to use to treat patients. He talked about health is the perfect balance. It's the perfect balance between the elements, the humors. He talked about the organs. He started subdividing things even more. So now you have six factors, nine temperaments. And he talked, and I can't pronounce this, about the life force as well. It may... Who can pronounce it? Extra credit. This is his idea. So that you have the four seasons. But you also have the temperaments. You also have moist, dry, cold, hot. You can begin to put everything on this map. So he even put Scorpio, Aquarius, Leo, Gemini, you know, even the signs were involved. You have air, fire, earth. And this is how you began to look at the person, the patient, and the disease. So it gets more and more complicated. Here are some of the elements. I'm not going to have time to get into this. The elements, what they represent, more things about blood, phlegm, yellow bile, black bile. Temperaments, the cause of disease is not a single entity or bacteria. It's based on your temperament, your reactive tendency. The idea here is, so if beta hemolytic strep causes strep throat, and that's a fact, if I expose all of you to beta hemolytic strep, why don't you get sick? Up until then, it's you have the bacteria, you get it. You must not have beta hemolytic strep. They didn't often talk about the mode of transmission. So what is the cause? The other thing that Avicenna said is, well, wait a minute. If it's exposure, the doctors and nurses would be sick all the time. They would be the most sick, the sickest, if they were exposed to it, and they weren't. So he said, it's also your temperament. What is your temperament as a healer and the temperament of a sick person and how you're living in concert with everything? This is the main point of what I wanted to mention. You can look at these lists. There's a theory of naturals, of causes, of signs. Last thing I want to mention is the diagnosis in Unani medicine, physical appearance. How do you speak? How do you think? Because that tells you about your balance with the constitutions. How do you move? They would watch people move, freedom of movement. They would also take pulses. And when we get to Indian medicine, I haven't seen it, traveled all over the world. Maybe he had experience with Ayurvedic pulse taking and TCM pulse taking. They would also inspect the urine for color, smell, taste. That's old too. So there was a lot of diagnosis. But the treatments were diet, to balance, and it was like Hippocrates. I didn't stress enough. Hippocrates said, don't give medicine. Don't bleed. Don't purge. Let the person be in balance. Sleep. Eat healthy food. How are you living? Unani medicine has more herbal medicine. He also would do cupping. If anybody knows TCM, cupping is where you, on the back or on certain parts of the body, you have this cup, you heat it up, put it on, and it suctions out. If anybody has ever had cupping on their back, you have like these red marks. If you're toxic, I've seen people get cupped and there's no streaks. So they were healthy. And a lot of hydrotherapy, a lot of water therapy. So then we get into the diaspora of that. So, conclusion. What we're seeing from Egyptian to now is a shift from magic, divine, spiritual causations to natural causes. We see there's a training code and ethics for physicians. But the main treatment still throughout all of this is balancing the humors. This is important. I want you to think about this because it's not about getting rid of the bacteria or the one thing. It's living in balance. Look at your lives. How in balance are you? What do you need to be in balance? So when you get sick, do you have to treat the cold or do you need to live in balance? And we see the introduction of Lisa Medicatrix Nature. I want you to remember about Galen and Avicennia. I have references. I can't even. Each of these could be a topic for years. So what are we going to do in lab? Lab, we're going to talk about medical oaths, sensing and perceiving, discussing magical thinking. There's no written assignment for this week, but please come ready to talk about this. Check your email tomorrow because we're going to have start lab together, all of us. I'm not sure if we're going to be in the chapel or we're going to be in this room. So please check your email. We're going to start reading. Reading Nature Docs, pages 13 to 29. It's on the syllabus. This is all on the syllabus. The article, the certainty principle I mentioned last week. That is on the portal, if you can download. The medical oaths are on the portal, so please bring the naturopathic oath on Wednesday. And there's no paper this week. Okay. Well, this is really exciting.